Invisible Sisters is a coming-of-age memoir about living basically in the shadow of your two sisters, Susie and Sarah, who both died young. And it's put you at the forefront of folks writing about death and grieving. And I wanted to ask you this because I know you to be an incredibly vibrant, vivid
yes.
person.
Thank you.
Do you ever feel sort of branded by this identity, the death writer?
You know, as the oldest of three sisters and the only one living, I've long felt that it's my duty to go on living and to be present. And I didn't write Invisible Sisters to become a beacon or what's the phrase, make of yourself a light. I wrote it to tell myself the story of what happened to this family. Where did they go? Who am I now? People came up to me after author events and they confided almost as if they were telling me this deep, dark secret. You know, I'm an only one left too. And part of my goal after I heard this a few times was realizing, oh, we do want to talk about this. You shouldn't go around with a big T-shirt on that says, you know, I survived this terrible tragedy. But at the same time, we want to be able to talk about it with people we trust.
The three books that you've brought to discuss today are each about coming to terms with your own history on a number of levels. So it would seem almost that this is a theme for you.
Yeah.
Although I don't know if you were against, I would guess that you weren't thinking this consciously when you chose them.
Yeah. I'm from Atlanta. I have one volume of Franklin Garrett's Atlanta and Environs.
Let's start with that book right there. Atlanta and Environs is a classic about Atlanta. Tell me about this book.
When I was growing up in Atlanta in Morningside, there were these three volumes. And the thing that I loved, and I guess I started looking at these when I was maybe 10, 11, 12, I'm opening the volume two now, which is the one I have, which is 1880s through 1930s.
And it's huge, by the way.
Yeah, this thing, if I had two copies, I could do my weightlifting for the day. Pick any page, and if you're a history nut like I am, you fall into this kind of rabbit hole. I'm just going to open this randomly to, here we go. Can I read you a menu?
Yeah.
All right. This is from the 1900s. This is a menu. The president at the time, William Howard Taft, was at a meal. Quote, the menu itself was more than ample and featured a dish popular in the South but new to the guest of honor, barbecued Georgia possum, broiled Georgia shad Chattahoochee style, Margot, Palm Marquise, spiced Georgia watermelon, boiled wild turkey, persimmon beer, which sounds kind of good, Mum's Extra Dry, which I believe you can still get, figs, cigars, coffee, cigarettes, and saltines.
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 What is Mum's Extra Dry?
I feel like it's a champagne or a wine.
So this one moment in great detail, this dinner with President Taft, and the book just goes on like that? You keep finding
It's a lot of fun to open a book like this. Pick a place that you know. I mean, here's Jet Road. I know where that is. And just see, you know, what was going on before you got there.
Really great for Atlanta, which we're always remaking ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. That's sort of what Atlanta does.
I know.
To be able to look back in time, maybe at that one spot, and see sort of everything it's been, it's amazing.
I mean, it's disorienting and it's fabulous when you look at moments in other people's lives and they connect with yours and you go, oh, I've been there, or oh, I've seen that, or oh, I would drink persimmon beer, maybe.
Your second selection is World of Our Fathers by Irving Howe.
Yeah.
So why this selection?
I love the subheading, The Journey of the East European Jews to America and the Life They Found and Made. I mean, that's kind of a statement about how things go, right? The lives that we find and make. This book was also in my house growing up, and my mother was first generation American, my father second. And what interested me about this book, and still does, are the photographs. Jacob Riis, Lewis Hine, photographs of the aftermath of the Triangle Fire, which I'm looking at right now. And that was something that was very important in my family. My father worked for the International Ladies Garment Workers Union, which came to prominence after that fire.
And for listeners who aren't familiar with what we're talking about with the Triangle Fire.
The Triangle Shirtwaist Factory was a factory on the Lower East Side in New York that employed immigrant women to sew shirtwaists. And I'm reading now from Howe's book from page 304. In the spring of 1911, the nerves of the East Side broke. One of the largest garment shops in the city, the Triangle Shirtwaist Company, at the edge of Washington Square, burst into flame, and in the 18 minutes it took to bring the fire under control, 146 workers, most of them young Jewish and Italian girls, were burned to death. The photographs fascinated me because I saw this uncle or that aunt or that grandmother in those faces.
Do you have a sense of how this book changed your perception of, or your understanding of, your family and where you came from?
Yes, I do. I read this book, you know, sophomore, junior, senior year in high school, around then, and was very moved by it. Here I am growing up in Atlanta in the 70s, and I'm wearing bell bottoms and I have dirty feet, and my first concert was Led Zeppelin at the Atlanta Stadium. My grandfather, my mother's father, never talked about his childhood in Eastern Europe. He just didn't talk about it. But I think what I found in this book, as with the Garrett book some years earlier, some kind of anchor. Who am I? Who was I? Who are these people? How are they like me?
Your third selection is, and you're opening, by the way, you're opening
a Ziploc bag.
Yeah, a little lunch bag, and you're taking out this worn. So we've been looking at tomes, by the
way.
We've been looking at these books that are sort of these giant,
2 and 3 inches thick, easily.
Yeah, and now we have one that you're holding in the palm of your hand.
The palm of my hand, and it's very fragile. The publication date on this is 1962. There's pencil drawings from some unruly child.
So we're talking about the Nutshell Library, and this is by Maurice Sendak, who's best known for writing and illustrating Where the Wild Things Are.
Yes.
But these are four small books that come together in a little case.
Yeah.
And they can fit in the palm of your hand.
And this one here, Chicken Soup with Rice, appears to be the only one that survived. And I guess the others were loved into oblivion, which is a good way to go. And what month is this, May?
Yes.
In May, I truly think it best to be a robin lightly dressed, concocting soup inside my nest. Mix it once, mix it twice, mix that chicken soup with rice. And the illustration is of a robin wearing a blue toque, a chef's hat, stirring chicken soup in her nest, which actually, when you think about it, is sort of cannibalistic. But, you know, that's not what the 3-year-old, 5-year-old who had this thought about it.
When did these books first come into your life?
This one, well, 1962, I was 2 or 3, and then it became a hand-me-down to my sister Susie. And then I know that my sister Sarah played with them, read them as well. But these are just so charming. I'm holding this now. It just fell open to July, because that's the middle of the book. There's that classic Sendak child floating in the ocean as a turtle cooks him some soup. But the binding is broken. The stitching is worn out. I love a loved book. It's an artifact from a narrative. Its primary resource, and it's, for me, it's a moment of love.
Jessica Handler, thank you so much.
There's bite marks on this. I just noticed this. Why are there bite marks on this book?
In May, I truly think it best to be a robin lightly dressed, concocting soup inside my nest. Mix it once, mix it twice, mix that chicken soup with rice. In June, I saw a charming group of roses all begin to droop. I pep them up with chicken soup. Sprinkle once, sprinkle twice, sprinkle chicken soup with